Everybody, how's it going? Back for another discussion-based podcast. Again, this is Nick Hagan with Capacity Performance Therapy, doing the Optimize the Capacity podcast. What we're going to be talking about today are top five lessons I've learned through managing ACL clients. And so by that, I mean, what are some common trends, common issues I've seen, mistakes I've made that have taught me how to become a better management of acute, mid, late stage ACL rehab, even blending into more of the performance sector of ACL training. And I think, at least for myself, and I imagine you guys are all this way too, sometimes the best ways to learn are through failures and mishaps and make sure you don't do it again. So just to set some standard expectations to lay the groundwork on some of these learning principles. Again, for a tissue graft, you got to give it at least a solid 6 to 8 weeks before you do higher end eccentric loading. The standard return to play used to be 6 months, but the evidence these days is showing 9 to 12 months. Any month after 6 months, your rate of re-rupture actually reduces by 17%. So the longer you can wait, the better your outcomes are. And obviously there shouldn't be some sort of criterion-based return to play, not just a time-based. That just sets the foundations for kind of general ACL expectations. So what are some common mistakes I've done or issues I've seen or things that I've learned? First one is the graft matters. So yes, there's a bunch of evidence showing that different grafts have marginally higher rates of re-rupture, like hamstring, I think is 2% more than bone, patella, or bone. Enough where, again, it makes a difference, but I think it's less about your rate of re-rupture on the graft, but it's more about the actual rehab process. So hamstring, bone, patella, or bone, and the last one, or the newer one, is quad, and obviously you have allograft too, which is becoming less common where they take a tissue from somewhere else. If I was having surgery, the ones I would recommend the least is probably a hamstring. The reason why they do hamstrings is the procedure is relatively straightforward to do. There's less anterior knee pain afterwards, meaning that you can kind of get the quad going and get extension going with more ease. And in general, it's just a little easier recovery. But I have seen, at this point, probably close to 100 different hamstring post-op ACL reconstruction autografts, and I have yet to see one who really gets all their hamstring strength back. And if you know your biomechanics, you know your hamstring is kind of like a incredibly important ACL restrictor or stabilizer. I think hamstring in regards to lower extremity kinematics is hugely important in pelvic stability, knee rotation, neural mobility, incredibly important muscle that they take a giant chunk out of. So when I'm rehabbing a hamstring, I make a huge, huge emphasis to load the heck out of that thing, both in all three phases, in neuromuscular control, strength, endurance, as well as power production. And I think power profiles for hamstrings can be tricky, but point being here is you're probably going to have less of that anterior knee stuff, but a harder time getting all the strength back. The bone, patella, or bone is probably the one I would prefer, has best research, lowest re-rupture rate, but the issue with that graft is, again, is that anterior knee pain issues where you get a lot of patellofemoral issues. But I think if you do a good job in the acute phase, get extension back, soft tissue mobility, get the quad going, I've seen these ones just do so much better. The graft is so strong. Again, you don't have the posterior chain weakness that all of us had to begin, let alone take a muscle out of it. And so those are the people, again, where if you're having anterior knee pain and it's maybe 6-8 weeks out, that's something where you shouldn't be alarmed. Obviously, it took a chunk out of it, right? You should be able to respect tissue healing and get it back. The newest one is the quad tendon. So this one has been shown to be good because you have less of the anterior knee pain with this, meaning you're not getting as much of the patellofemoral issues that you would get from a patellar tendon graft. The section they take out of the quad tendon is a little bit more manageable and it's equally as stable. The issue here is you get this almost anterior interval or front of the knee, just global soft tissue dysfunction, where you kind of get this radiating tension above the kneecap that can be difficult to manage. But again, with these folks, you got to set expectations. So I have one right now who's about 4 months out. She's still having some like knee tension. The more static she is, she feels it. Obviously, I don't want it there long term, but that's something that you got to expect. Again, appreciate recovery, where for that, it might be trickier to get all your quad strength back. But I've actually just tested her out recently, and her quad strength's actually doing awesome. She actually almost has symmetrical quad strength. She has some other things going on, but long story short is you got to respect the graft, understand each person's going to have different symptoms. Each person's going to have different timetables of recovery. So ideally, you're not doing cookie cutter ACL rehab regardless of the graft. Lesson number two is you've got to get some sort of creative way to test out rate of force development. So rate of force development is basically the more official way of saying speed training. With rate of force development, you're looking at how long it takes you to produce large volumes of force. So I like to say, you know, you could move an ox, but if it takes you 12 years to do it, it's not going to be very sport specific. So it's that combination of being able to move high loads, but also at high speeds. If you're in a good clinic setup where you have force plates and all these fancy tools, obviously those are going to be the best ways to pick it up, but you've got to find some way to test it. So we currently do not have a force plate. So what we utilize are a couple different things. We use a just jump mat, which is a version of way of testing vertical, right? So we do single leg vert and we do single leg vert side to side, and I want to see 90% to each side. So that's more of a vertical force production. Again, it's not going to get rate. It's going to get probably overall power. But again, we're doing the best we have with what we have. Another cool one is if you do have a Kaiser pulley system, is we will do that as well, but have a belt on them, and you'll actually get a better version of rate of force development. So if the belt's around you and you jump, it will give you your watt outage. The watts, again, is kind of like a force and power over time scale. So the vert will give you more of a power profile, where the Kaiser or some sort of machine where you can get a wattage output is going to give you a little bit more of the speed factor, which is really what we're looking at. We'll also look at triple hop, crossover hop, and all that as well. But you got to get some sort of way where you can test speed, change of direction, and so forth, versus just simple triple hop that's just testing more of a power production. Lesson number three, don't get too objective. You have to assess quality as well as quantity. So this is something that I used to get stuck up on, where I would have all these numbers, all the numbers look good, strength, motion, squat, like a squat scale, obviously looking at some of the jump tests, but you just almost get too fixated on the numbers and lack the quality, right? So just because somebody can jump really far or jump really fast doesn't mean they do it well, right? So everybody's seen somebody do a horrible squat. That doesn't mean just because they can squat, that's a good squat, right? So, you know, you can use Coach's Eye, you can use apps on your phone, have them do some general movements that you think correlate to their sport. So some general ones might be a depth jump, where you jump off the box, land, jump again. I do like a lateral cut where I'll set out cones and they have to go, moderate speed, where they have to plant, cut at a 90 degree angle. I'll also do decel, that ability to eccentrically load the knee, get into more of that knee flexion range, and I'll video it. And we have a qualitative scale, but basically it's the standard stuff of knee valgus, foot pronation, pelvic rotation, lumbar flexion, and that lack of knee flexion angle where they end up really tall versus low. So that was lesson three. Make sure you assess quality, not just quantity. Lesson four is the endurance-based test. So I've done tests like the Vail Sports test in the back, which is just in the past, which is a huge endurance base. You just do all these different jumps and squats forever. We currently just do a single leg squat test, where you're doing long duration endurance-based squats, and I want it to be symmetrical side to side. So about a 65 degree knee flexion angle. I want them to be able to do 2 or 3 minutes of one leg squats on the involved side, and ideally the non-involved side is somewhat symmetrical. One thing that I've been saying that I haven't really referenced is you have to be testing the other side. I know the other side isn't the gold standard. You want to test for symmetry, but you also want to make sure that you're not picking up any inherent deficits on the non-involved side and they tear the other knee 2 years later or whatnot. So the fourth lesson here is you got to test endurance. A long duration squat, a long duration jump test, whatever you can do to get creative to test how they do with fatigue in the system. And then this is my last one, which is kind of correlating with what we were just talking about. Don't skip the phases. And so by that, I mean, if you haven't finished phase one, which is mostly full range, end range extension, full active control of terminal knee extension, normalized gait, efficient bilateral squats, air squats, so range of motion, neuromuscular control, basic functional movement. I don't care if you're at 12 weeks or if you're at 2 weeks, if you can check off of that box, then you can progress. If you haven't, don't progress. I've seen quite a few ACLs that have gone elsewhere, and they'll come in and they can't even get their knees straight, or they don't have quad control, or they haven't even normalized gait, and they're 4 months out and they're already doing jumping. Excuse me. So sometimes people get fixated, okay, you're this far out from surgery, I have to be getting you to do blah. And again, don't skip the phases. So commonly what you'll see is people skip the first phase and they don't get all the stuff we just talked about. Or the other thing is they'll skip the last phase. So they do good with phase one, they do good with like mid-phase rehab, they've got them moving, they've got decent strength, they started jumping, but just because they can do more plyometric high-speed things doesn't mean they're 100%. So those are the people that are 75, 80% of full function and they get full return to sport clearance. Maybe they go that first season without issues, maybe they end up being fine, but those are the people who likely re-rupture, right? So that's where you have your criterion and really get as objective as you can to ensure they've got all that function back. Part of the limitation is the insurance model, right? Luckily, we're not in this model, but if you have 20 to 30 visits, there's no way you can get all the way there. So if you're in the insurance model, make sure you educate day one. You're probably gonna run out of visits and we gotta set up a long-term plan. If you're not in the insurance model, kudos to you, and you can kind of ideally dictate that however you want, but incredibly important. So let's recap. Top five things I've learned through my own failures through ACL. Lesson one is respect the graft choice. So by that I mean, don't just treat everybody the same regardless of the graft. Lesson two was the criterion-based system. Don't go by time, go by objective measures, but also make sure you're assessing some sort of qualitative movement as well. Lesson three was rate of force development. Get creative, find some way to work on it. Lesson four was to have some sort of endurance-based metric, testing underneath fatigue. And lesson five is don't skip stages. Just because you're X weeks out doesn't mean you can't work on patellar mobility if they don't have it. Don't rush the process. Let the patient dictate it. Let the client dictate it, not the date from surgery. Way more to talk about ACLs, but things I've seen that I've messed up with or others that we can all learn from. Hopefully there's some good knowledge there. More fun content to come. Email nickh@capacitypt.com. DM us online, whatever you got. Let us know if you have questions. Thanks, everybody.